here, we're trying to talk a little bit about some of the most common scenarios that come up in the Shabbos relating to care of children, little children, big children, adults, rabbi children, anyone who comes under this category, issues related to child care on Shabbos as well. So of course there are many, many different aspects of the Shabbos we can focus on. We're going to try as best as we can just to highlight some of the more common scenarios that come up. So let's begin. We talk about issues that relate to food preparation on Shabbos, because they relate to children. So there are a few malachas we can talk about. We're going to focus on two or three of them. So one of the malachas that comes up, very common in terms of dealing with children, is the malacha of tochein. The malacha of tochein is, obviously practiced in the Mishnah. Mishnah describes it as part of seduit depas, part of preparing food for bread. Someone takes a piece of grain, chops it up, makes it into little pieces into flour. That's, of course, the actual malacha of teichin. The Gemara says, Masechta Shabbos, that one can violate teichin even in a less dramatic way. If a person takes a big piece of food and cuts it up into little pieces, that's considered to be teichin as well. That is the view of most of the Rishonim. That's what we pass in Shulchan Aruch. There's a rush in Masechta Shabbos that claims the Gemara doesn't even say that. He has a whole different reading of the Gemara. But Masechta Shulchan Aruch, we pass in that there is teichin even on something which was edible before. I take a tomato and I cut it into little pieces. We assume that that is a potential problem in the Torah of Tochen. So this is of Tochen comes up very often when dealing with kids. You want to prepare food for a child to eat, so then you don't want to give him a big, big piece, you want to cut it into little pieces. So do you have to be concerned with the issue of Tochen? So there is a question that the Rishonim raised, just how dak is dak. The Shulchan Aruch uses the phrase, dak, and already in the case you're not sure how dak is dak, so to say, if your Reim also wasn't so sure. The Lozzi Mitz, the Talmud Rabbein Tam, writes that we don't know the key, and we don't know exactly how small the pieces are. Therefore, we try as best as possible not to make things very small. If you take, let's say, a tomato and cut it into half, that's obviously not Teuchin. Take a cucumber and quarter, cut it into the whole cucumber into three pieces, that's clearly not Teuchin. Once you start to get into small pieces, then it becomes much more difficult to discern. So it's going to be a hard line where to draw exactly what's considered to be Teuchin. So the Rashba has a chiddush gadol concerning the malach of teichin. The Rashba writes, just as we find concerning the malach of beirah, that sometimes if it's done, sabach ha-se'uda is going to be permissible. Not always, there are all the details in nuchas beirah, when sabach ha-se'uda is matzah and when not, but there is a principle of sabach ha-se'uda and nuchas beirah, and the reason for the kula of sabach ha-se'uda, we shouldn't explain, is because that's called derech achila, not derech malacha. So the Rashba says, we have a right to extrapolate the malach of teichin also. If something is done, some of the suda, that's not considered to have a shem teichin on it altogether. Therefore, according to the Rashba, if you cut your vegetables, cut your fruit, whatever it is, right before the meal, so that would be a permissible. The Ramah quotes this Rashba lahalacha, and many others are not so sure that we should follow the Rashba. There are other Rishonim who disagree, who say that if you just extrapolate, compare one malacha to another, you can tell me that Bishl is also with the some of the suda. You're allowed to be co-same some of the suda. I mean, you never heard of such a thing. So obviously you have to know which malacha is here, which malacha is no. So the Rashba claim that the hetter does carry up the teichin, and others disagree. The Yafta Mishabur recommends that one shouldn't be outright makel under shiloh, one shouldn't follow the Rashba just straight out, but rather one should treat it like a little bit like a sveik in the din. And the Yafta Mishabur says that if you're cutting your piece of food anyway into not such small pieces, so we're not really sure when that's teichin altogether. The Yerayim wasn't even sure where the line is drawn. So it's anyway a suffix. You're not even sure how big the piece, how small the pieces are anyway, and it's a pasuda. So that would be mitzvah together, the fact that it's probably going to be mutter. That's what the Mishnah Berurah leaves us hanging. There are others who will make it outright like the Rashba. And the Mishnah Berurah says you should only be make it like the Rashba if you don't make the pieces too small. So those who follow the psak of the Mishnah Berurah, so we try to be careful. So when you're preparing food, let's say for a gadol, during time you want to cut it, make an Israeli salad or something, then you should try to be careful that the pieces aren't going to be too small. So then you do it right before the meal. That would be okay, even according to Mishnah Berurah. If you're preparing food for a child, so that sometimes becomes a little more difficult. You don't want to make the pieces so big. The child's going to choke on it. The whole goal is to make it very, very small. Let's say you take a grape and cut the grape into little pieces. You cut the apple into little tiny pieces for the child. So those who want to prepare the food for the children, they have to rely on the Shita Sa Rashba outright. So Yeshua Bin Mishpach, the Ramah quotes the Rashba explicitly. So again, so the chachil, if I could try to make the piece a little bit bigger, matoiv, if it's impossible, so then those who rely on the Ramah and the Rashba definitely have what to rely on. One should be careful, even according to the Mekilim, this is only true of it's Samach L'Seuda. Samach L'Seuda means that although the Rishonim have a phrase, within an hour before the Seuda, Rav Moshe writes in the tshuva that that lashon of an hour is lav dafka. An hour is just a melitza. It basically means right before the meal. Whatever's done, otlad, right before the meal. Let's say if a person is planning on going to take a walk before the meal, so you shouldn't do the acts of taichin, or the acts of burr for that matter, before that walk. When you come back for the walk, then and only then, as you're about to sit down for the meal, then you do whatever acts of taichin, etc. There is another common shaila that comes up concerning taichin, particularly for children, and that's the issue of mashing. For example, mashing a banana, a very common thing. But is it permissible to mash a banana for a child on Shabbos? So the Chazanish argues that mashing a banana is mamash malachat deraisif teichin. He says that it's such a fundamental violation of the malachat teichin that he doesn't even think the Rashba would be makel to do it some of Chasuda. So the Chazanish claims that the medin on a murm that the Rashba was mapped to some of Chasuda, that's only something which is not objectively teichin. Something like cutting a vegetable, either it is that or not that, it's hard to call. It's the Rashba said, if you put it into context, and you do it some of the Suda, so that leads us to believe that it's more derech achila. But if you would make grain, if you mamish do a real, absolute, 100% objective, bona fide act of teichin, so says the Chazanish, doesn't think even the Rashba would forbid it, even some of the Suda. The Chazanish thought that the smashing of a banana, or avocado, anything of that nature, is considered to be teichin gomer midaraisa, belishum suffering. And therefore, any coolers of Sofa Chasuda are not going to work. And in addition, the Chazanish says, he's not even sure we pass like the Rashba anyway. The Rashba is such a chiddush, he's not even sure that we should follow the Rashba altogether. So then the Chazanish turns around and says, so based on what I just said, it's an issue their rights to the mash a banana. So how are you going to feed your banana to your kids? So the Chazanish says, no problem. Just do kiliachayat. If you do it with the back of a spoon or something, the back of a knife, you do it in an abnormal fashion, then it's mutalach hadchilas. That's the famous tzach of the Chazanish. The mash a banana can die, but that's a deraisa. Then it becomes a butl l'chadchila. So Rav Moshe responded, not literally back to the Chazanish, but Rav Moshe was responding about this chiddush of the Chazanish, and he thought that this pesach of the Chazanish was not correct on both grounds. Rav Moshe thought neither the chumah was correct nor the kula was correct. He thought that the chumah wasn't correct because Rav Moshe thought that teichin is only violated when you take one big item and you cut it up into little pieces. When you have a banana and you just mash it up, so it was one piece, and that was bite the one piece. Same piece, same chefza. It used to be a big, warm banana. Now it's a mush of banana, but it's not like flour. It's not like you take a piece of grain, you cut it up to little, now it's tiny particles. It's not like an apple, you cut it to little, not like a cucumber, you cut it to little slices. It's the same basic mush, it's the same one banana, just albeit a little bit of a different format. So Rav Moshe didn't think that the chlal that was even related to the malacha of teichin, that's number one. And even in terms of Leimar, that it is Teichin, says Rav Moshe, but the Rashba's right. He thinks the Igra didn't like the Rashba, but he thinks the Rashba would apply to this kind of Teichin also. So the whole chumras of the Chazanish, to call it Teichin, and to say the Rashba's not accepted, and to say the Rashba himself wouldn't accept it, so Rav Moshe thought with Chilu V'Atzoif that wasn't accurate. And then the second year for the Chazanish, that the Chazanish was Mekil, you do it Kaliachayad, so Rav Moshe thought that also wasn't right. Rav Moshe writes that if it's really Teichin, you're right, so the Fishit is a Chazanish, so when you do malachas deraisa kliachiyad, it doesn't become mutter. It becomes also a derabanan. So if the chaznish is really right, it should bite. It should bite the nisa derabanan. How did it become? How did it transform from becoming also a derabanan to becoming mutter lachatchila?
Is
some of
the suda dafer just any
derabanan,
meaning the child was the middle of the afternoon?
Yeah, that's called suda. Suda doesn't mean to the Shabbat. Suda means before you get. Yeah. So the chaznish, so Ramay should disagree with the whole mahalach of the chaznish with chilvi atzayit. He didn't think the chum was right. He didn't think the kula was right. But then at the end, Rav Moshe writes that even though I don't accept what the Chazanish is saying, Bein L'chula, Chumra Bein L'chula, I think that's totally mutter, but Kedai L'Chazanish, we should be machmer. It's a Shabbat, it's a Shabbat, a Raisa, so we should be machmer, we should be cheshish for the Chazanish. But then he says, we don't have to be more machmer than the Chazanish himself. Just as the Chazanish, Pesha also Pesha Hittir, he's the one who asked it, and he's the one who said, Kaliach Yad is mutter, even though Rav Moshe says, I don't really understand how that kula came about. But since I think the whole thing's mutter anyway, so I'm going to meet the Chazanish halfway. So when all the dust settled, Bain and his living lower east side, living in Bnei Brak, they come to the same conclusion that you should only do mashing bananas, kaliachaya. According to the Chazanish, it's really their rights of the Mecca for Mecca kaliachaya. According to Rav Moshe, it's basically mutter, but was thrown in a chumra just yesterday's b'chashish for the Chazanish. That's fine, all the svarim, they're right. And those who have this tremendous desire to eat bananas on Shabbos, so should they do it, albeit kaliachaya. Again, so we talked a little bit about the Malach of Teichin, according to the Moshe, maybe we didn't talk about the Malach of Teichin, whatever it is, we have a couple of examples of things that may fall into the issues of Teichin. There's another common Malach that's involved in terms of preparing food for children, and that's the Malach of Lisha. So the classic lash, of course, is you take flour and water, make it into a dough, make bread. That's to do in the past. That's a classic example of Lisha. How does Lisha come up in terms of children? So it comes up a lot in terms of preparing baby food. So baby food, for those who've never tasted this yummy innovation, so basically you take this powder, baby cereal, you take the powder and you mix it together with water, you make it a little mush, and sure, you feed it to the baby. So that's a potential shayla of Lisha, because you took a powdery substance, you took a liquidy substance, you mix it together, made it into a mushy substance. So that sounds exactly what the melacha of Lisha is. So whenever we're dealing with the melacha of Lisha, we have to be aware of certain things, certain possible kulas to permit what would otherwise be a problem of Lisha. The Gemara speaks about Lisha being permissible if one does a Lisha in an abnormal fashion. If one does a Lisha kaliachayad, this is one of those melachas that someone's going to be more. Normally the rule is, whatever's done kaliachayad is also a derabban. Every once in a while, there's an exception to that rule. So Lisha happens to be one of those exceptions, but the Gemara itself says in the Sefer Shabbos, that if you do a shinoi, so it sometimes will become mutl lechatchila. The only problem is that you have to make sure to do the shinoi at the right time. So let's say, for example, if I go to the closet and pick up the box of cereal, and I pick it up with my left hand instead of my right hand. That's not called a shinoi. A shinoi has to be done at the time the malacha is taking place. So this becomes a very, very doctrinal point as to when exactly is malacha's lisha violated. So this is the machlekes atenoim, the beginning of Masechta Shabbos, the end of Masechta Shabbos. A machlekes between Rebbe, Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda, what exactly is the moment of truth of the malachas lisha? What exactly is the moment of violation of malacha? And this becomes critical for us because any shiur that we're going to introduce must be introduced at the right time. So according to the view of Rebbe, the malacha of lisha is violated what we call the shas nesina samayim. As soon as the water and the sal and the powdery stuff mixed together, okay, the classic lisha b'mishkan, you know, or the mishnah describes it in the past, you take flour, you take water, as soon as you pour the water into the flour, that's the malachas lisha. Before you actually mixed it, before you didn't eat it, before you needed it, just the etzim v'sinah sarayim is the malacha d'iraisa. And Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda, eino chayav et shi'egabel. The malacha of lisha is not completed until one does the gibel, until one actually mixes it and kneads it and rolls it and does a real formal mixing together. That's the moment of truth. How do we paskin the halacha in this machlokes? That's a big machlokes. We show you what the maskanas of the varim is. We try the halacha to be cheshish for both views. We're not quite sure which is the real moment of truth. Therefore, when it comes to doing things kaliyachayad, we have to make sure that we have our kaliyachayad in place, both according to Rebbe's view, as well as Rebbe Yehuda's view, because we don't know exactly which is the real moment of the chiyuv lisha. So let's look at lisha through the eyes of Rebbe for a moment. If I want to try to do a shinoi in terms of a baby cereal, so at the top of Nesidah Samayim, what would constitute the shinoi? So the Gemara says that the possible shinoi b'shas Nesidah Samayim would be to flip the order. If it's normally done in one way, then it should be done the other way. So normally, let's say, for example, you'd have a type of a mixture that you would usually put the solid in first and then the liquid. You have to go out of your way and put the liquid in first and then the solid, and vice versa. Whatever's the derech to do it 6 days a week, on Shabbos you have to do it with afrechul. So the question becomes, is there really a seder dvarim? What is the seder dvarim? You make baby cereal. I haven't made baby cereal in a long time. Anyone knows? How do you make, what's the normal way of making baby cereal? Well, makes baby cereal. Okay. My kids were never big, they were never big into these right cereals and the yolk cereals, all this kind of stuff. Usually, I remember one time when my mother-in-law was in the house and she was feeding one of my kids chon. So the kid was like 8 months old. It's supposed to be on one of these rice children cereals. My mother-in-law grew up in Geula and Yerushalayim. They didn't prefer these kinds of things. The kid was old enough, they ate chon. Anyway, so, Baruch Hashem, all's well that ends well. Okay. Is there a seder kavua in terms of the baby cereal? So this is a question. Some folks can raise that there may not be such an IAI seder kavua. So some folks can say that maybe the place and this should be the box of cereal. Namely, whatever the box of cereal tells you to do, so you have to do the opposite. So what does the box of cereal say? You got to read the box of cereal. So whatever it says in the box, whatever the ilum supposedly does during the week, that's what you should do the other way around. So you can really get the sense that we're not so thrilled about the shooting that's about to take place, because we're not even sure that we can even do it properly. Then we move into Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda's shinoi, we run into even more problems, because what's considered to be a shinoi for Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda? So the Gemara says that, according to Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, it's not enough to make a shinoi in the Nesidah Samayim, because that's not the moment of truth. You have to make a shinoi in the Gibel itself. So how would you do that? So you have to be Megabel Kaliyachayad. How do you Megabel Kaliyachayad? So the Gemara talks about maybe you shake it together instead of mamash mixing it together. You can do it from today till tomorrow, you're not going to get any baby cereal out of that. What other things? The Gemara talks about doing the gibel shasi ve'erev. I mean, instead of mixing it, you know, with a real heavy motion, you do kind of crisscross motions. You do this, that, this, that. So if you start now, by the time your grandchildren are born, you'll have a babysitter that's ready. Especially if you hold like the Chaznish. The Chaznish says, when the Gemara's Matar Shesed the Erev, it means like this. You have to do once, then you got to take this spoon out of the cereal, then go back down again, and then go to this, and then take it out again, and then go back down again. So again, it's going to take a little long time to do it. Then the post can talk about maybe if you do it with your fingers instead of using a spoon. So just make sure your wife didn't hear that part of the shiur. At least put a glove on it if you're going to do it with your fingers. Again, yesh v'yesh. A lot of different etzes how to do this. Then to make matters even more complicated is that there are many poskim who claim that all of these atayim only apply if we're dealing with what we call a blila l'racha, not a blila l'ava. The Gemara says in the Enemas of the Shabbos that lisha d'arais is only violated if it's a derech blila l'ava, if it's a thick, doughy kind of a mixture. If it's a pourable, like a pancake batter or something, that's a blila l'racha, that's only a lisha d'arabonis. Many poskim will say that all of these atayim only apply when you're dealing with a lisha d'arabon anyway. If you're dealing with a lisha d'arais, none of that they apply. That's what the poskim today write. And even if a person wants to avail themselves of these coolers in terms of leash for grain to baby cereal, why don't you try to do it derech blila l'racha? How do you do that? Pour a lot of water in. If you make it very, very loose, which the kid's not going to eat anyway, make it very, very loose, so then you have yourself a blila l'racha. And then you can go ahead and do your two shinuyim. So the bottom line is there are three things you should be careful about when making baby cereal on Shabbos. One is to make sure, to try to make it a blila l'racha, if you can. If you can't, you have to rely on the mekilim. Even blila l'ava would be okay. Number two, you should try to make a shinuy b'shas tassidus anayim, which you're not even sure what that is. And then you have to try to make a shinuy b'shas gibul, which is also hard to figure out what it is. So one could already get the sense that making baby cereal on Shabbos is not the greatest, the eitzah. So b'shas adchav, if the kid doesn't need it, give him something else to eat. But if the really kid really, really, really needs it, so then the lace brayer, you have to try as best as you can to make it a little bit racha, and try as best as you can to make the shinuyim at the appropriate times. Other issues that come up in terms of feeding children on Shabbos, sometimes the melacha of vishal comes up. Vishal, particularly in the case of reheating, people are reheating bottles. So let's say you have a cold bottle and you want to heat up the bottle, so is that considered to be a potential problem of vishal? It depends what kind of milk we're dealing with. If we're dealing with milk that was a formula, that was a regular milk or something that was already cooked, so then we have a rule called ein vishal acha vishal. There is a machlokes of Rishonim where the ein vishal acha vishal applies to a double lach, a famous machlokes. So the Shulchan Aruch is machmer on this, that yesh vishal acha vishal b'davar lach. The pashas in the Shulchan Aruch is that it's nisa d'araisa, and the Ramah is makel. The Ramah says that the ikra din is probably ein vishal acha vishal. Then the Ramah throws a curveball and he says that if it's mitzvah on the gamer, then there would be a problem. So many poskim, including the Chazanish and the Maishim, of the opinion that the Ramah fundamentally disagrees with the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah fundamentally was machriya that ain bishlach a bishul, even by davar lach. The only thing is that the Ramah was machmir, says a chumr b'yalma, whatever it is, so that if it was totally cooled off, so that it looks a little bit like bishul, not everyone's going to realize that it was bashul already. So therefore, with Taras chumr, the Ramah is saying you shouldn't reheat something that was fully cooled off. But in terms of the ikikra din, so the Ramah is probably assuming that zaka ain bishlach a bishul b'davar lach. Whatever it is, whether Ramah meant it as a chumri, meant it as a ikra din, whatever it is, we try to avoid as best as we can to reheating liquids on Shabbos, even though they were already dismashal lagamrei. Nevertheless, the Mishnah Berurah is makel that if it's done in a klisheni, that would be permissible. As long as the liquid was already cooked, and now you're just coming to reheat it, recook it again, so even though it's mishnah lagamrei, as long as it's klisheni, it's right. Usually we don't like to cook things in a klisheni, because we have all kind of chumri. And those who learn traditional b'Shabbos are well aware that l'maisa we try to avoid cooking in klisheinis on Shabbos. But since the whole cooking in klisheinis is also b'teras chumra, so we're not required to combine the two chumras together. So if something was already in b'ashet l'tzarech, even though it's not alach, in a klisheinis that would be okay. So l'maisa, if you want to heat up a bottle in a klisheinis, that would be all right. What if you want to heat up a bottle that was never cooked yet? Say it's breast milk that was just frozen. Now you want to heat it up. That would be much more chomer. Then you would have to, you wouldn't be able to do that in a klisheini. So according to some poskim, that would be permissible in a klishlishi. Rabbi Isha held that even things that were never cooked are permitted to be cooked in a klishlishi, and others disagreed even with that. That's the bad news. The good news is that it's almost not relevant because you're not going to really heat up the milk all that hot. You don't want it to be yatsa lettuce, but the last thing you want to do is burn the baby. So you just want to take that little bit of chill out of the milk, so you're never going to really be cooking it mamish anyway. But in terms of lomi, you really, really want to heat something up. So then if it was already cooked, in a cliche, it would be mutter. If it wasn't cooked yet, so then maybe klishlisha, maybe even that would be problematic. If you wait around long enough, so then the water in the klishlisha will cool off, and then it will be for sure mutter, because you're not going to accomplish what you want to accomplish anyway. But if you think about the shayah long enough, that's usually the way to solve visual problems. Okay, anyway, get back to that story. There is another issue related to babies eating, particularly nursing on Shabbos, and that's the very issue of nursing altogether. So obviously the halacha is that a baby is permitted to nurse on Shabbos. There's a lot of lumdas as to why that is true. Because after all, we assume that chayle, when you if you milk a cow on Shabbos, according to most Rishonim, that's an issa deraisa. There are 4, 5, 6 different shittas in Rishonim, which halacha exactly it is, but it's some halacha. So either it's disha or it's memareach, or maybe it's kaitzer, maybe it's geize, you name it. Somebody has one of the malachas to attribute it to. But according to most Rishonim, it's an issa deraisa. So why is it mutter for a baby to nurse? Isn't a baby in effect doing that? There are different answers that are given. So there's some who say they're not chinami, it's takam malachas deraisa, but it's pikuach nefesh. There's no way to know how much milk the baby needs, therefore it's all pikuach nefesh, therefore it's all mutter. So we usually assume that that's not the case. We usually assume that that's not necessarily the answer. So there are other answers that are given. Other answers that are given is that since the milk is the derech achila of the baby, so maybe that's not considered to be mefarek, maybe that's not called taking someone's meyoicha, maybe it's echmiyach, a lot of lumdas as to how to explain it away, but when all the dust settles, it's mutter for babies to nurse on Shabbos. However, what is not permissible to be done is to extract milk, not derech nursing. So let's say you have a situation where a baby is either baby's sick, and the mother's sick, or the baby's in the hospital, the mother's sick, whatever the case is, the tachlis, the baby is not nursing right now, but the mother wants to extract the milk anyway. Why does she want to extract the milk? Because she's in a lot of pain. So this is permissible. The Shulchan Aruch quotes that this is permissible based on two different reasons. That when a woman is just extracting milk and she discards the milk, she's not giving it to the baby, she just throws it to the garbage, so that's what's called chayla v'ibud. The chayla v'ibud is mutter for two reasons. Number one, it's mutter because it's a malacha she'en etzricha l'gufa, because I'm doing the malacha not for the purpose of using the milk. That's, by definition, not going to be an issa d'raisa. It's only going to be an issa d'rabbanan. Most of the Rishonim paskin against the Rambam, the malacha she'en etzricha l'gufa is only mid'rabbanan. So since it's only mid'rabbanan, the makom tzar of the woman, we are matter that issa d'rabbanan. That's one approach. And then the other approach found in the Rishonim is that whenever it's Chayav L'Ibud, that's not called Derech Disha altogether. The whole Malach of Disha, the Mishkan, was required the using of the item. If you don't use the item, it's not Pshat that it's Mutter, because it's a Malach Shehetzich L'Gufa. That's Bechlal not called Derech HaMalach. It's not an Issa Bechlal. It's not a Derabban we have to be there. It's Bechlal not called the Malach. So those are the two official reasons given the Rishonim why Chayav L'Ibud is permissible. The only problem with
you need to... Does it need to be extracted into a utensil that can't be used, or
could
it just be disposed from the utensil immediately after extraction? Like,
meaning,
like, do you need to put salt in the utensil?
That's the question. So some folks can have this idea that in order to be called chayav l'ibud, it has to go directly to the ibud. It has to go mamish into the dover, into the detergent, into the garbage, into something. But if you collect the milk in a kli, in a pump or something, then you throw it to the garbage 5 minutes later, so some folks can say that's a shavu deraisa, because that's not really called chayav l'ibud. So there are poskim like that. One could perhaps argue with that. And I say perhaps because the Chazanish was on that side of the Machmirim. But there are svaras perhaps to argue with that conclusion. L'chadchila, we tell people they should try to do it that way. L'chadchila, if a woman's able to do it derech ibud mamish, so that's the best case scenario. Some women get very, very nervous about doing that. They don't want to start putting detergent inside the pumps in Maislach. So those who, for whatever reason, can. So there are svaras, there are some poskim more metal. Yeah, as long as for mice it's going to be l'ibud, even though this split second it's not really l'ibud. So again, if you can avoid it, that's better to avoid. The problem is that very often the woman doesn't want to do that. Very often she wants to save the milk. Let's say if a woman goes to work on a Tuesday and she's nursing, she's pumping at work, and she doesn't throw the milk out, she puts it into the bottle and she sticks it into the freezer and she'll give it to the baby 2 weeks later. So that's a problem on Shabbos, because if you're going to save the milk, sometimes the baby can't nurse properly, can't latch on properly, but the baby wants... We want to give the baby that milk. So you have to save the milk from before Shabbos. If you're going to extract the milk on Shabbos and put it into a bottle and feed it to the baby an hour later, so that's going to be a serious problem on Shabbos. That's going to be a potential malacha deraisa of cholif/dash, whatever the malacha is involved. There are some who are a little bit more lenient about that, who are always nervous that maybe the baby's not going to be able to eat the formula properly, or the baby's not going to be able to get enough of milk otherwise. So some folks are concerned, maybe it's a chashash of pikuach nefesh. It's yesh v'yesh. It depends on the context. So if a taka is such a concern, there's a real, real concern that the baby is not able to take other things, then there's no other milk that's stored up from before, so you don't have a problem. So what do you do? Pikuach nefesh is mutter. But usually, I don't want to say usually, but very often that's not the case. Very often the baby's already taking formula sometimes. Very often there's plenty of milk that's stashed away in the freezer from beforehand. So just the fact that you're taking some milk and throwing it into the garbage, that's not going to make any difference in the baby's general well-being. So if it's not at all considered pikuach nefesh, so this is a sibi shaila of a deraisa, one has to be careful not to do this, not to pump, save the milk, and then feed it to the baby later. Just in terms of the pumping part, so the easiest way to do it up the aloch is to use a hand pump. But a lot of people don't, many women don't even own hand pumps anymore. Most women today, when they go to work, so they use the electric pumps. So if one wants to use an electric pump on Shabbos, you have to get around all the electricity problems. You have to set it on timers, or you have to go and turn it on, or you have to put all kind of kunzim to figure out how to get the pump to work properly, just in terms of electricity. Since today she has not electricity on Shabbos, we're not going to talk about that. But just keep in mind that just to do it in a normal manner, to pump the milk, feed the milk to the child, unless there's a real concern of pikuach nefesh, that would be a serious problem. Okay, so we spoke a little bit about the food. Again, there are many, many other things to talk about food, but we'll just leave the food part for now. Let's move on to another different part of caring with the babies and young children on Shams and Yatif, and that's the issue of cleaning up a child, particularly cleaning up in terms of a child, child goes to the bathroom, in terms of diapers, everything related to that part of child care on Shabbos. So there are a host of potential malachas that can be involved in changing a child on Shabbos and Yatif. We'll try to see if we can go through some of them. So one of the most common shahs is the very use of diapers is potentially problematic. There are two potential malachas that could be involved in terms of diapers. One is the malacha of kerei, and one is the malacha of toifer. There's no stitches, there's no clothing, there's no garment, there's no climb a mishkan or something, so what's going on? What does it have to do with kerei and toifer? So the Rambam writes that hamadavik niyaris b'shabbos, if a person glues together papers on Shabbos, that's a malacha d'irais of toifer. If a person is mafrit, feina, niyaris adivuk, if a person rips apart the papers that were glued together, that's a malacha d'irais of kerea. So those two potential malachas are violated when you open and close diapers. So if you have diapers, the old style diapers. If I'm not mistaken, I think Pampers are still that way. A few years since diapers. Pampers are still that way, they still have the adhesive tabs. I think they're the only best. No? Where's those little babies, you know? No?
They're all different.
But some of the Pampers still have it. A lot of them have switched over to the Velcros. But the Pampers, I'm not mistaken, last I checked, so they still have the adhesive tabs. So when you open and close the adhesive tabs in Shabbos, isn't that a potential double malacha? So there are different opinions about this. So there are more quotes in Machlokes Rishonim whether the malacha of Kirei and Teifer applies when it's what we call Tefira She'ena Shel Kayama. If it's a type of a Tefira, that's not going to be permanent. So there are, just as we find certain malachas, let's say malacha Kaisher, there are differences between Kesher Kayama and Inishel Kayama. So to the malacha of Teifer, there's a difference between Kayama and Inishel Kayama. So the Rambam quotes Rishonim say that whenever you have a Tefira, whenever the gluing, the sticking together is Inishel Kayama, so then there's no malach of Teifer, and then the reverse is also true, there's no malach of Kerei as well. And the Ramah quotes the other Rishonim, or Machra in the Shaila. So the Ramah concludes that we shouldn't be make up of Fnei Amei Aretz. We shouldn't stop be make up and tell people, Fiyush Enesh HaKayam is okay, because people are going to be Mezalzel in Malachas and Shabbos. So you get the impression from the Ramah that Meikra didn't hold his mutter. If he held his osur, he wouldn't say, don't tell the Ratzim, don't tell the Tamichom, nobody should be doing it. So you get the impression from the Ramah that Meikra didn't probably hold it's okay. But he felt it would be somehow inappropriate to be mefarsem to the rabbi. So some poskim said that perhaps the Ramah was only concerned about if you're going to tell people that tefirish enosh hakayam is mutter, they're going to start sewing on Shabbos. So that the Ramah felt that would be a terrible piritza. If you start telling people you can sew for an hour on Shabbos, as long as you take it apart an hour later, so he thought that would be a big zilzal on Shabbos. But when it comes to tabs and adhesive, those kinds of things, that's such a zilzal Shabbos anyway. So maybe the Ramah would be making that the Ikra then is that Tefir Shanach Shechayama is permissible. So it was that idea that became the basis for some poskim who were willing to be making that all opening and closing of adhesive strips and band-aids and diapers, all this kind of stuff, is the Ikra din mutter on Shabbos and Yom Tov. That was one approach of poskim. But even a niyach that that's true, that we're going down that route of Tefir and Kriya Shanach Shechayama, who says this is called Enosh HaKayama? So we should have brought in a diaper for display. So there are four different potential opening and closings of diapers that each one is a separate shaila. Let's say I take the diaper out of the bag, so now I want to, well, before I take the diaper, I have the baby first. The baby is laying on the table, and the baby is dirty. So what do I have to do? So I have to take off the tab, for one. I have to take off the dirty diaper before I put on the clean diaper, that I still remember. You have to take off the dirty diaper, so I have to open up that tab. So I have to open up the tab, that's the potential malacha of kereya. Is that called Eino Shel Kayama? Yeah, because this babe, that pair has not been together for more than 24 hours. We're assuming 24 hours is probably the cutoff point for Shel Kayama if we find the Kaisha. So this, the baby's been stuck together for 2 hours. So when I just undo that tab, so according to the Mekilim, that's called the Kri of an Eino Shel Kayama. Then what do I do with that diaper when I take it off? So I want to throw it into the garbage. So very often what people do is, I don't want to just stop, take a filthy diaper and just toss it into the regular garbage. First I want to close the diaper up. So what many people do, the 6 days of the week, is they'll take the tabs and they'll close the tabs on each other on top of the diaper and roll them to a ball and throw them into a bag and throw them into the garbage. So that act of reclosing the dirty diaper on itself, that's a potential problem of Teifer, and that's a potential Teifer Shel Kayama, because it's going to remain that way in the Yom Bod. So the diaper disintegrates, it's going to remain stuck together. That's a very, very long sphere. So maybe we could be made to open up the dirty diaper, but to close up the dirty diaper may be a more serious problem. That's a big machlekes acharenim about that type of a teifer. Is that considered to be shel kayama or not? So on the one hand, it's going to last for a very, very long time. On the other hand, I couldn't care less how long it lasts for. I just want it to be stuck together until it gets into my garbage can. Once it's in my garbage can, the bath, in my house, I couldn't care less whether that diaper opens up. The garbage man, that's not my problem. So since the tefillah is being done shel kayama, but my machshava is not really shel kayama, is that considered to be shel kayama or not? A very, very dachistic shaila. So the truth is that shaila is really not a teifa shaila. That's really a general kayama shaila nechul Shabbos. What determines kayamas? Is kayamas determined by the metzias, what's going to happen? Or is kayamas determined by how long I'm interested in it remaining shel kayama? So one of the strangest riots to this shaila is called the name of the model Diskin. He quotes a riot from the Sor Mishalech on Yom Kippur. You have to think about this 100 times over. But he says that, it says in the Mishnah Maseches Yuma, that they used to tie the Lashon Shel Zahiris onto the horns of the Sor Mishalech, then they would throw them off the cliff, and they would hope, as they would go off the cliff, they would see that it would turn white. That was a symbol that they got Mechilas Avodis. So the Maral Disk, you have like different approaches to how to learn these kinds of sugyas. If you're a chassid, so you read this and say, wow, look at the nace, and unbelievable, you know, what Hashkacha Pratis, that the red ribbon turns white, Kedusha V'Tahara Gavaldik, and the Misnagid looks at this, well, this was the Brisker Rav. He was before the Brisker Rav was. He was the original Brisker Rav. So the Maral Diskin looked at this Gemara, and he says, how can it be? So Misnagid Shekasha, how can you tie the ribbon onto the sword? The Nisim Alachanyim Kippur, it's a Kasha Shel Kayama. So the Maral Diskin says, you see, for me, that's not called Shel Kayama. Why is it not called Shel Kayama? Because I don't care. Once it already goes tumbling down the Sur Lazozel, I'm not going to go look and see what it looks like now. So I'm only interested in it remaining tied to the horns of the Sur for the next 5 seconds. So that's called the Kesha Shev Shel Kayama. Even though it's going to remain Shel Kayama until Advias Goel, until somebody takes it off the Sur in the bottom of the Azazel, so that's Al Pi Allah considered to be Eino Shel Kayama. So according to that Maral Diskin, you can be making under diapers. That's Svara, but that's Al Pi Din not considered to be Shel Kayama. Others are Deicha that Raya and say that, nah, it means when they threw the Sar off the cliff, so then the Sar fell into a million pieces, and the verse says, Nasei Varim Yevarim, and the ribbon fell off also. So the ribbon got untied on the way as it's tumbling down. So you have to go test that. You have to go take a sarla, so I'll throw it off the cliff and tie ribbon and make believe and see what happens. Come to it on Yom Kippur, do it another time. The Gemara says that the good news is that maybe that wouldn't be called an aveir of makrif karbanos b'chutz, because the sar is not royal level of mifnim. So the first mishnah in the second last preface of Vachem says that's not nisidir aisim ala b'chutz. So next time you have nothing good to do with yourself, so try to experiment with a goat and a ribbon and see whether it falls off or not, and that will determine whether you can open your diapers and close your diapers and shops. Anyway, so we're not sure exactly what the din is. So therefore we recommend that if a person took the diaper off, so yesh machm lahakel to take the diaper off, because that's koreish eno shel kayama according to the Mekilim, but you should try not to stick it back on again. Just take the diaper and just throw it into a bag and shine. Don't tie the bag up, otherwise it's kosher in the bag. Just take the diaper, throw it into a bag, and throw the bag into the garbage. It's better to avoid that second tying, that second fastening. So good. So now we got the dirty diaper off, and now we're ready. We didn't get to clean the baby yet. That's the next part of the topic. I want to put the clean diaper on. So what do I do right now? So I have to take the diaper out of the bag, I have to open up the tabs of the diaper. So what is that exactly? Why is that called Eino Shel Kayama? That tab was stuck together for the last 10 years since they made the diapers in the factory. I don't know how long it was, probably more than 24 hours. I bought the diapers last week, so it's more than 24 hours. So maybe that opening of the new tab is considered to be a kriya of something which is Shel Kayama. So that's a big machlokes acharonim. So acharonim right, not tachem right, nochanami. Another achrayim right now, that's also called Enesh HaKayama. Why? Because even though it's true that the Metzias, it was stuck together for the last 6 years, but when it was stuck together, it was made al das to be open at moment's notice. When Mr. Pampers stuck this together in the factory, so he had in mind that someone's going to come, some lovesick is going to come in 6 months and buy this diaper, but maybe he'll come in 10 minutes and buy the diaper. So it was made al das to be opened immediately. So nobody really wanted, the owners of Pampers never really wanted to be stuck for any particular amount of time. Their das was, whenever it will be opened, that's fine for them. So according to that svara, whenever you deal with manufactured items, that's all automatically called Enesh HaKayama. So we would have grounds to be makel to open up that diaper as well. And then to close the diaper, to fasten the diaper would also be okay according to the Mekilim, because the fasting of the diaper is for sure Enesh HaKayama. The baby's going to have to be changed again in 2 hours from now. So that's for sure Enesh HaKayama. So the bottom line is there are four different stages in terms of the opening and closing the diapers and the different degrees of how good and how bad they are in halacha. So again, the dirty diaper, when you take off the dirty diaper, that seems to be very, very good, because that's mamash Enesh HaKayama. The tying up of the dirty diaper into itself is much more problematic, depends on the certain mishalach sugya. The opening up of the clean diaper depends on the machlekes acharonim about how do you define exactly kayama factories. And the closing of the diaper is probably all, for sure, good according to the mekilim. So this is all bedas and mekilim that tefirah Enesh HaKayama is mutter. If you don't accept that, then it's all awesome, then there's nothing to talk about.
Is there an issue with Velcro at all,
or
that's always
good? Velcro,
we'll
get to Velcro
in a second. Are you saying that
the
manufacturer is
Metzias,
that someone could show up?
Yeah.
In 10 minutes, or
is that
Shabbat, the same
challenge? It's not Shabbat, it's not Ho, you don't need Ho, like it was Yom Tov. It's Mei, El Das, Kayama means that, let's say, I'm making a kesher, because I really, really want this kesher to be around for 6 months. Yeah, Pampers couldn't care less how long this is stuck together. They just want to sell you a bag of diapers. They don't care whether you buy it now, they buy it in 6 months from now.
So it's calling on the same issue of how you define balance?
I mean, is it a throwback to that? It's almost like a flip. Maybe it's related. I don't know. So one could accept the basic cool of Kayama and not be thrilled with that first application of Kayama. Namely, maybe we accept fundamentally Kayama is all right, but that first svara of, or the third svara, whichever one it was, of, well, it all depends on the manufacturer, maybe we're not so excited about that. Some of them didn't like that. So some poskim, modern-day poskim, have the following shara, that if you have to open and close that, but that's okay. But you should try to open them more from before Shabbos. Namely, you should open them and then, if you open them and leave the tabs open, then they're going to lose their stick. So you have to open them quickly and then reclose it. Open it, so figure out how many diapers you need for one Shabbos. And you open and close it beforehand. So that way, even that initial opening of the clean diaper is a for sure an Enesh HaKayama. So you can be marviach, and you don't have to rely on the manufacturers first. There are some who have that. So remember when my children were first born, so I used to try to be machmir for that. I used to try to open up the diapers from before Shabbos, I'd quickly open them and close them and show them. So that practice that we had in our home stopped very quickly. Not that quickly, but it stopped when my second child was born and my first child was still in diapers, and it was a 3-day yontif. So it was a 3-day yontif for two children, so it came out to, it was, I think, 60 diapers or something. And when it's 3-day yontif, it was in a row. So it was Rosh Hashanah said this, it was 487 diapers opened in the course of 2 hours. So I figured, if my wife wants to be a maker like the other Achmarim, Tavala Racha, she can make whatever she wants. So the bottom line, the Pesachness of Lusky home became that my wife does the diapers on Shabbos. I try to do it during, I used to do it anymore, but I used to try to do it during the week. But on Shabbos, the diaper coolers were all in her domain. One could be maker perhaps on diapers for a totally different reason, that maybe our entire premise of the last 10 minutes wasn't even true. Maybe this is not even considered to be Medavik Niyaros altogether. Why is that? So some folks can have a svara that Medavik Niyaros means when the Niyaros and Mavish stuck together, you have to pull and yank and rip it apart in order to, here, this is really tonus. It's not yanking together. A little bit of adhesive, a little marshal, a band-aid or something. That's not considered to be Medavik. The whole marshal of Medavik Niyaros and Rambam is not correct. So if you go down that route, so then the whole shayla is moot shayla and everything is moot. If one wants to avoid all the shyness, they can use Velcro. So many of the diapers now, some of them you have the adhesive straps, strips, many of them just use Velcro. If you're using Velcro, so then we generally assume that it's not considered to be malacha altogether. That's almost like buttoning. Velcro is little hooks, little holes or something. So we assume that's like buttoning holes, and that's probably not a problem altogether. So again, yesh v'yesh. There are other shyness that come up in terms of diapers. This is something that's a newer thing. We didn't have this in our days. Those are the diapers that change color. So you put the diaper on the kid, and then when the kid is wet, so it shows up a big, turns blue, I don't know, whatever, smiley face, that the child wants to be changed. So So some were ma'ira, then maybe that's a problem because that's like safina maybe a daim. That's like feeding a child the treishas. You're not allowed to cause your child to do malach on Shabbos. That's the post in Chumash L'saskim L'chato Vincha. Vincha is not a gadol. Gadol is ata. Vincha is the baby. Is the child. So when I put the diaper on, now the child is causing the child to do a tremendous malach on Shabbos. What's the gefelach malach that the child is doing? It's tzaveya. So we usually assume that that's not accurate. That's not considered to be causing the child to do malacha, because the child has no idea what's going on. The child's, if you tap the child on the shoulder and say, do you realize that you're being severed the diaper, they probably wouldn't know what you're talking about. So we assume that that's not really, I'm not being mashed, I'm doing an affair. The kid's just doing what he's supposed to be doing. That's not considered to be at all a problem. That's, that seems to be the mistaber svar, although some folks did actually raise the alarm about these diapers. There is another...
If someone were to feed straight the baby that age, so...
Yeah, but it's asik b'chalavim is a chayev. So that is considered to be nice of it. When you change a baby, so there is another issue. Namely, you have to try to clean the baby up also. So how are you going to do that? So of course, the normal way you would do it during the week would be to use baby wipes. That's a big question. The poskim, what exactly the status of the baby wipes is? Is that considered to be a problem of schita, we should leave, there are different kinds of schita. The schita fruit, it's one kind of schita, that's not the issue here, maybe it comes from Shem, maybe it is. And there's also the issue of a schita on begadim, is perhaps a totally different issue. So the bottom line is there an issue of schita on the wipes or not? So it seems to be almost a question in terms of mitzvah, namely just how absorbed into the wipe is the liquid. So some have argued that the Matzias says that the liquid is more external to the wipe itself, so you're not really being seichet out the liquid. And others say it's not true, that there is something that really is absorbed into the additive itself. To make matters worse, the stuff that's inside the wipe is usually has aloe vera in it, which is something which is gedulei karka. So when you seichet something which is gedulei karka, that's a more serious problem. That may be a problem of not deep. There's basically a Rebbeinu Tam that says that there are two issues of schritas begadim. There's one issue of leaven on the bag, and there's another issue of disha, if you want to get the juice out. Let's say, for example, if you're trying to clean a bag, Rabbeinu Tam says, when you have a bag that's full of water and you squeeze it out, that's not a malacha of disha, that's a malacha of kibbutz. So it's hard to believe there's a malacha of kibbutz on baby wipes. What do you do? You're cleaning the wipe, you're making the wipe filthy. That's called derech. So the potential issue on the baby wipe of schritas is not the issue of leaven. At worst, it's a more serious problem of schita mishum disha. I'm trying to squeeze out the juice, but I squeeze out what's absorbed into the baby wipe, if it's true that it's absorbed, to use that stuff that's absorbed. So Rabbi Tam says, if the stuff that is absorbed is gedulei karka, that's a very, very serious problem. So aloe vera is gedulei karka. Let's be checked. Doesn't grow on the ground? Do I know? I think so. So I'm squeezing out it's like squeezing a grape. I'm squeezing out something for the purpose of using the item that's coming out of the baguette. So that could potentially be a problem. So again, if the metzias is that it's not absorbed in altogether anyway, then it would be okay. So yesh v'yesh. It's very hard for me to give a clear-cut answer to this. It seems to be an issue of metzias. In our home, the policy was that in our home, babies were changed with certain people using baby wipes. I didn't say that I used the baby wipes on Shabbos. Whenever it was my turn to change the baby, besides the diaper issues, so I would just do it in some of the more old-fashioned way with water or whatever else was available. But in terms of those who want to use a baby wipe, so there are gedolei poskim or matan the baby wipes, but there are others who are not so sure that they're used.
Is it a chashash d'oraisa or a chashash?
According to the machmir, it's a chashash d'oraisa, yeah. Yeah. But again, I don't want to say it's also there. Gedolei poskim who say that it's not this. I can't say that more than it's also.
But it's kizyam for Shabbos also.
The problem is you screw for Shabbos and then there's no point to it. That's just a dry, you have to use a dry tissue.
If it would cause the baby tsar, is there more meaning?
It's like any other child, you know. If you really believe that it's mutter, then it's mutter. If you really believe it's an iskilas, then you gotta wing it with your hands. They do make this, the spritz stuff. This Chassidish company that put out the baby wipe in a spritz bottle. Says all it's kosher, the chaladeus, and shamans, and the chametz free, whatever it is, nobody calls it. So if you spritz it onto the baby, use a tissue, so that would be a little bit better. So I remember when one of my kids was born, I was so excited, I went to the store for like 20 of them, and then my wife used it once, and she said, it doesn't work. So the mice we still have in the house. My youngest is 10 years old already, so I think it was, I don't even think it was the baby, I think it was one before that. So, my next child is 15, his birthday was just 15. I think it was when he was born I bought them, so 15 years they're still sitting in the house. The good news is that there's no chametz in them, so they're not chametz shalom tassim. The bad news is that they don't work. Okay, nothing right here that said is going to be repeated to anybody, right? It's just between friends, yeah. Of course you do. You want the liquid. The liquid is the liquid is what's going to clean the baby.
Yeah, if you, while it's on wet, you don't need to come out.
Well, yeah, well, if you really believe that the liquid is inside and you're trying to get more liquid out to clean the baby better, so that's the situation of the nicholas.
You need the liquid to come out to clean the baby while it's on the wet, it's cleaning the baby.
The stomach, the more liquid to clean the baby is going to be. So if the metzias is that the liquid is really absorbed, you're probably happy about that. Like if you do it on Tuesdays, you don't say to yourself, oh, I'm so upset that there's extra liquid coming out. I wish it never would have come out. I mean, of course you want whatever liquid to come out. Okay, good. So anyway, so now we have the baby's eating well, the baby's clean well, everyone's ready. Now it's time for the baby to sleep. That's easy. Put the baby to sleep. The Shabbos, there's no malach involved. Oh, we'll see. There may be some malach involved in that also. So let's talk in general about calming the baby down, having the baby sleep, relaxing, playing games, etc. So how many different things can we have problems with Shabbos can we have with that? So one of the issues in Shabbos is that they're still popular, the swings, baby swings, people still like them. So when the kids were born, that was a great thing. You stick the baby into the swing, you turn it on, and do whatever you have to do, and the baby just swings back and forth and back and forth. So the problem is you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. So there are two types of swings. There are wind-up swings, and there are battery-operated swings. So obviously you can't press the button on the battery-operated swing like any other electricity, but can you use the wind-up swings on Shabbos? So this was a big question. So if someone wanted to argue, maybe the wind-up swings is like winding a watch on Shabbos. The Chayyolim is a famous psak that if a watch stopped on Shabbos, you're not allowed to wind it up. The Shal deraisa mach b'patish. So we usually assume that way, even though not necessarily everyone agreed to that. But that's generally the way we assume that we're not supposed to wind up a watch. Most people don't even know what I'm talking about, but it used to be in the old days, used to actually have to wind up a watch every 24 hours, also that it would stop. So the Chayyolim says that that's considered to be melacha deraisa mach b'patish. Was machlokes a poskim in Europe about whether that malach applies if the watch is still running. Some poskim held that if the watch is running right now, you can't call the makapat. It's not broken. And they say if it ain't broken, you don't fix it. So it's not called fixing it if it's not broken. And others said, no, just the fact that you're now adding more koichas to the watch, maybe that's also called the shtibal makapatish. So that was a machlokes. So I have a masur, ishbukish, from my grandmother. My grandmother told me that when she was a little girl in Europe, her little town in Poland, they used to say, it's okay. That as long as the watch hasn't stopped yet, you're allowed to continue to wind it at Shabbos. But yet, not everyone agreed to that. But when it comes to these wind-up of the baby swings, so the swing is off now, so I want to come put the baby in and start winding it up, maybe that's a problem. So some said, yeah. Some said, according to the Chayyot, there would be a Shabbat deraisa. So Shmuel Zalman thought that wasn't necessarily correct. He thought there's a big chiluk between the watch and the baby swing. He says, the case of the watch, when I'm looking out of my hand and say, oh my goodness, the watch is not on the right time. Oh, yeah, the watch isn't working now. I got to fix it. So then the Chayyadim said, winding it up is called the Malacha Deraisa. I walk into the house and I see that the swing is off. The baby's sleeping. The baby's sleeping in the crib and the swing is off. So I walk in and say, ay, 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 that swing is broken. Never going to go fix that swing right away. Well, it's honest. The swing is supposed to be off. It's only supposed to be on when the baby's in it. So it's not that I fixed the broken swing. The swing is only working. It only works when the baby's in it. It doesn't work when the baby's out of it. So maybe that's Bechlal not considered to be Derech Malacha altogether.
Just putting a baby in a swing with batteries, without the batteries on.
Oh, but yeah, we get in a second with that. So again, yesh v'yesh. Some folks can make to turn on the swings, the gamut, the shalom, and others were concerned. So remember when my first child was born, we lived in the Heights, and we didn't have that many exciting activities to do in the Heights in those days. That was before the Arab. There was no Arab, even on 187th Street. Nothing. So we had a swing, and I was concerned about winding up the swing. We had a serious shabbat, some folks go on the shabbat deraisa. So I said, okay, what we'll do is we'll get a battery swing and we'll turn on the batteries before Shabbos. So we'll the swing will be going the whole, beyond the whole Shabbos. So we did that one time, and then I didn't like that either because the swing makes a lot of noise. The swing makes a lot of noise, the Shabbos Mashmiya Kol. The Gemara has in the first paragraph, we'll set a Shabbos and the Chalikas Amaroi, and the Chalikas and Shulchan Aruch from the Ramah, that if you have a system set up from before Shabbos that draws a lot of attention, it makes a lot of noise, is that considered to be a Mashmiya Kol that would be a Bizayin of Shabbos? The Ramon is Machmir, we try to follow those poskim. Any system that's set up before Shabbos that draws attention to itself is a problem, unless it's the type of a system that everybody knows that you put on from before Shabbos. That's why the Ramon was Mekel. He talks about the grandfather clocks. It goes ding dong, ding dong. So the Rambam says everybody knows that it was set up before Shabbos. If you have a system that people don't set up before Shabbos, it's usually set up right before you put it, but you set up kuntz and you set up them before Shabbos, so the Rambam writes that would be a nisr of Mashmiya Kol. That's where Moshe asked for the alarm clocks in Shabbos. He said that if you set up an alarm clock from before Shabbos, then that's not only something you do from before Shabbos. Most people set their alarm before they're asleep. You set your alarm. So if a guy sets his alarm before he goes to Mincha the night before, and now the alarm goes off on Shabbos morning, that's the Zilzul Shabbos. Nobody knows that it was set from before Shabbos. And that would be a problem by Shmiya Kol, that's what Ramosha writes. So others disagreed with Ramosha. It's hard to understand why they disagreed. Others disagreed with Ramosha. But the alarm somehow was not a problem. I remember one time I said this year, I don't remember whether it was a contemporary halacha or some other format, I said over this sheet of Ramosha, and apparently somebody in the shiur told one of the rabbanim in the New York area that Rabbi Sobolovsky said alarm clocks are also on Shabbos. So the Rav got very upset, and he told him to tell Rav Sobolovsky it's not true, that alarm clocks are mutter. I don't know what he wanted from me. I said, I just quoted right out of the Moshe. Moshe said, you want to argue with Moshe, you argue with Moshe, don't blame me. So, but Moshe asked the alarm clock. The only kind of alarm clocks that Moshe was not there was if it's so low that you can hear it outside of the room. He felt that the shiur of Mashmiya Kol is only if it's audible in the next room. The problem is, if it's such a low alarm, it's probably not going to work for you either. According to Ramosha, you get these like vibrates alarms. These guys have these alarm clocks that the alarm clock starts flying, it pours water on you, all these kinds of things. Yeah, those kinds of things would be more. Maybe it's shadow malabin, it pours water in your shop. Maybe, okay. But otherwise, it would be okay. So I remember when we first, Kozman, and I wasn't married yet, so I was in the dorm. In the dorm, so I don't know, somebody whoever the dorm counselor wake us up a Shabbos morning. I got married, I realized I better figure out a way to make sure I get up a Shachar. So I started to set alarm clocks on Friday afternoon, and I thought that these alarm clocks were mutal choladegas because I didn't think they were so loud. I wasn't even all the das, you can hear it outside the room. I thought you close the door, no one's going to hear it in the next room. So according to Ramesha, that's pach to the shir of the Yisur Mashmiya Kol. Until one morning, not on a Shabbos, one morning during the week, we used to live on 187th, 480 West 187th. You want to live there? You want to live there? Okay, which apartment are you?
4F.
4F, okay, close. We were 5C, okay? So in those early years, so I used to say shiur in Riverdale earlier at 6 o'clock in the morning. So I used to drive to Riverdale in the morning. Then I would drive back. We only had one car in those days. My wife had to take the car to work. So I had to zoom back in order to be back for her. So usually I would. Before I left at 6 in the morning, I would set the alarm clock to wake her up in a half hour. So one morning, she probably didn't hear the alarm clock. I was walking back from the parking lot, and I was coming back to our building, and we lived on the fifth floor. It was in the spring or the summer, the window was open, and I could hear the alarm on the ground from five flights up. So then I realized that that's bad, because that's when I from that point on, I stopped setting alarms in Shabbos. I realized that it was a lot louder than I perceived it to be. Anyway, to get back to the swings, so I thought that the swings were a problem. The swings make a racket. And leave it on, it goes, makes a lot of clunking noise. So I thought it was Mashmiya Kol. So we couldn't use the wide-up swings because of the chashash and mechlev partition. We stopped using the battery swings in Shabbos because of the other problems. So now the kids had to go back like the old days when you have swings. What did you do when your kids scream? You put them in the crib and try and figure out an answer. Again, but they're makilim. They're makilim on the wind-up. It's one of the lines of Shalazam.
Is there
a room
to be makilim
on
the dinder of Anamashmiya Kol for the hashash of the raisa of Sosma Krishma or whatnot?
So stay up the whole night and learn. Not missing, I don't know. If you're really, really worried, so then okay. If you're really afraid you're going to miss my Krishma. Which, the good news is that once you have kids, you don't miss my Krishma. Okay. So what other things come up in terms of the children's of relaxation? So another...
Can you put in at the batteries are?
Yeah. If the batteries on, I mean, if you're willing to make a little Mashmiya Kol, so then you're not going
to
do anything.
Without it on, just to put the kid in, swing him yourself.
Swing yourself, yeah. It's like any other battery toy, you know, if it has a use without the battery. Other issues that come up in terms of keeping children quiet. So one of them is you want to take the child out for a walk. So depends where you walk. So if there's an Eruv, that's great. If there's no Eruv, so that's a big problem. So even though sometimes pushing a baby carriage could be their ice, sometimes it could be their rabbanon, depends how old the child is. If the child is able to walk by themselves, so then we apply the rule in a Torah called Chaynos Yasatzma. If you carry a person who's able to walk on his own, that's not a malachat deraisa, but it's still an issue of the rabbanon. If the child can't walk on their own, so then most folks can hold, so that's considered to be a potential malachat deraisa. Yeah, so there's a Shisram deraisa, which we may or may not have commonly been managed there. The bottom line is that there's no area of Yinala to push the stroller on Shabbos. If there's some unbelievable Shasar Chach, you have to get somewhere and there's no area in town, whether you're allowed to ask a goy to push a stroller is a big question. The Ikra din should probably be mutter. If the area involved is only a derabbanan area anyway, even if the child can't walk, but pushing it to Carmel is only a derabbanan, really, Yaakov is a derabbanan, it's a great book of mitzvah or something, so there may be certain grounds, lahakel, but it's a case-by-case basis. The post can write that it depends where the community is. In some communities, there's no Erev, that's considered to be a big zilzal Shabbos to have going and walking around pushing your baby carriage, so then those kinds of things should be avoided. If there's no great zilzal Shabbos, nobody knows about Shabbos anyway here, so then it would be most, somebody once called me, there were some out in the boondocks, in the middle of nowhere for a Shabbos, and there was some big Shasal Chach, they had to have a goy push the baby carriage, so they wanted to know, is that going to be a problem? I said, well, what's the standard of zilzal Shabbos in the community? They said, everybody drives to shul on Shabbos. So what kind of zilzal? Everyone's mezuzah on Shabbos. So they see you having a goy push the baby carriage. No one even knows that there's any shayla. Again, it depends case by case. But the starting point is that one would not be permitted to push the baby on Shabbos. On Yom Tov, of course, one would be permitted to push a stroller on Yom Tov. The Mishnah says, "Botzi nes hakotzer," even though some Mishnayim say that means only for the purpose of Bris Milah. We follow the other view in Tosfos that it means any just a Yom Tov, enjoy a little shpatzir. Even if there's no Erev, that would be okay. That's called Hotzol Letzarech Hayom. Even though it's called Hotzol Letzarech Hayom, one could argue, from the book of Yom Tov, that what if there are other things in the stroller besides the baby? So anything the baby may need, let's say there's a little snack in the stroller, that's okay. If there's a toy in the stroller, those are all Letzarech Hayom. That's going to enhance the baby being happy. Diapers, all Letzarech Hayom, that's okay. But what if there are things in the stroller that is Bechlal not Letzarech Hayom? They just didn't undo the stroller from yesterday. You're not going to use it all, so that becomes part of a complicated about Rebbe Bishirin on Yontif. It's not Shabbos Shabbos. The Yontif Shabbos is that considered to be Rebbe Bishirin on Yontif. So that gets very, very complicated lumpers about that. So for we've been living since the day of nights, there've been Erevin all around. Some people in our family like to rely on the Erevin. Some people, the Chumra, maybe don't like to rely on the Erevin. If the Erevin is really no good, then nobody should be relying on it. If the Erevin is really good, but you have personal needs of Hasidus, then you have to decide, you know, how that's going to play out in terms of the family dynamics. But we see you have a situation where one member of the spouse, the little group, is using the Erev and the other is not. So when Yontif comes around, you should try to go the extra mile. You should be the person to push the stroller on Yontif. That was always a minigun after him. I would always go out of my way to tell my wife, all the Yontif, all the walks on Yontif, I'll be the one to push the stroller. Except I would always start scrounging around the stroller before and start yanking things out. But when we were sure, you have to do that a few times, otherwise don't do me any favors. We'll leave everything in. I push the stroller the other 50 weeks, the extra push on Yontif also, and show him. Again, that was already chumras, what's called we were sure, what's called. Anyway, getting back to this story. There are other issues that come up in terms of a stroller. That's a potential issue of a CSOL. If you want to open and close the stroller, is that considered to be a CSOL on Shabbos? So there are many posts in Mamekel, that's not considered to be an OL. That's like the equivalent of the Gemara called a Kisei Trasko. And you have the whole thing is there already. And all the pieces are all connected. It's just a question of folding and unfolding. So maybe that's not called an CSOL altogether. Not everyone agrees to that. Rav Moshe was Machmer in this, but Chazanish was Mekel, and many people are Mekel in this. So those who are making just to open and close the stroller or the hood at the whim, that definitely have what to rely on. Those who don't want to rely on the school bus, and then they would have to leave the stroller, the hood, open a little bit, spread out a little bit from before Shabbos. The Gemara says, whenever you have an Ola Roy, so as long as it's open a tefach before Shabbos, you're allowed to be Maisib al Ola Roy. So those who want to be Machmir, you have to make sure that the stroller is always open a little bit, it'll spread out a little bit from before Shabbos, at least the minimum of a tefach. Those who just rely on the Chazanish, like many Rishonim would say that this is the equivalent of a Kisei Trasko, so then this would be a mutter at whenever one needs to open it and to close it. There are other issues that come up in terms of playing with things with kids on Shabbos, so we talk about little baby stuff and older kids as well. So playing all kind of games, board games, boys, those kind of stuff, so this is only discussion for people who are under the age of Bar Bas Mitzvah. Anyone who's a grown-up should not be playing any kinds of board games and any kind of playing ball. All these things are considered to be not really in the proper spirit of Shabbos. But for little kids, they're both pretty makel. As long as there's no real malach involved, they can play the board games, they can play, you can be makel under the age of a mitzvah to play ball on Shabbos. Again, it should be done in a mechubedek way. It's not the time to have little league games, it's not the time to have, 6 hours of non-stop of basketball all day on Shabbos. But, you know, toss it around a little here and there. for young kids under bar bas mitzvah, that would be acceptable. For anyone over bar bas mitzvah, that's something that's considered to be a zilzul Shabbos, something that we would not, we would strongly not recommend. There are a lot of issues that come up with kids as relate to general chaylin. It's a little bit of a borderline between the din of care for children and issues of cholim and Shabbos, because kids have to a certain degree a status of a chaylin on Shabbos. The halacha is that one is permitted to violate a mir liyachom whenever you have a situation of a chaylin she'en b'sakana. To violate a malacha d'iraisa, so you have to be a chaylin she'esh b'sakana, safi chaylin she'esh b'sakana. To violate a mir liyachom, you just have to be at least the minimum of a chaylin she'en b'sakana. We generally assume that little kids are considered to always be in the state of a chaylin she'en b'sakana. How little, there are different opinions in the post. I mean, little babies for sure, even somewhat younger children. It's hard to give an absolute answer depending on the constitution of the kid, just how weak and sickly the kid is. But definitely little children are considered to be a chalish ein b'sakana, and therefore Mir Yaakov is going to be permissible for them. In addition to Mir Yaakov, so there is a big machlekes in the Rishonim. What about other Dirabbanans? Do we say that Mir Yaakov is an example of all Dirabbanans? All Dirabbanans are mutter for chalish ein b'sakana. But we say, no, Mir Yaakov is more kal because it's a shvusha ein b'naiseh. So we pass in the halacha like the Ramban. The Ramban says that not all Dirabbanans are mutter for chalish ein b'sakana, but things that are done kiliyachayad are, if you do something in an abnormal fashion, that's a very low level type of a shvus, and therefore that would be mutter for a chayla she'em b'sakana, for extension for a younger child. There is a machlekes as to how far the Ramban went. So when the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Ramban, the Shulchan Aruch quotes it as being, if you have a dirabbanan done kaliyachayad, two things together. If you're doing a dirabbanan kaliyachayad, that's mutter for a chayla she'em b'sakana, for a child. And others later are going to point out that if you look at the Ramban himself, he seems to go way past the Shulchan Aruch. Like Leital, and Shalazaman, thought that the Ikra did is like the Sikh Leital, is that even a derais and a Dantli Yachayad would be mutter, tzorach of a chodesh she'en b'sakana, by extension of a tzorach of a child. So the Shmir Shabbos quotes from Israel, quotes from Shalazaman, who was making the Ikra did like this, although the other Gedolei Poskim were machmir, who followed the Shulchan Aruch. But there are Gedolei Poskim were making that anytime you have a tzorach of a chodesh she'en b'sakana, we try to do it a heter if you can, you try to do it a goy if you can, but if for whatever reason you can't, so then as long as it's done for yachayad, so meikra din, that would be permissible. You have these kinds of shalos very often when you have a kids get coughs all the time, they end up putting on these nebulizing machines, so you have to sometimes turn things on, turn things off in Shabbos. It's not so simple to put it on timers, it's not so simple to get going in the middle of the night to do it. So otherwise the kid's coughing away, and again, if it's pikuach nefesh, fine, but very often it's not pikuach nefesh mamish. So then as long as you do it, make it comfortable, you do it to the achayah, you turn the switch on and off of your elbow, things like that. If it lays brera, then those kinds of things would be mutter whenever there's some kind of a tzarech of a katan, a young child. For this reason also, we assume that if it's cold, so make sure the kid doesn't catch a cold, it would also be mutter. The Rishonim would make it even for adults for that. We call cholam et tzina, that you're allowed to do certain derabbanans, and really yakom, maybe other possible derabbanans. These are all considered to be tzorchei acholos. Again, we're not talking about cholim in general on Shabbos, but kids very often cross this boundary. There is a common child that happens to kids. We hope it shouldn't happen too often, but it does happen. Kids tend to fall and tend to get cut. And then question is, how do you deal with that exactly? So it depends how big the cut is. If it's just a little 2x0 cut, then you just clean up a little bit and put in a band-aid. Assume you can open up the band-aids on Shabbos, like we spoke about. If you want to put a little bit of bacitracin on, so that's important. So you should try to avoid smearing the vessel tracing. Smearing any kinds of creams is a potential malach of a mareach. So what we should do is just kind of plop it on. Take a little glob of vessel tracing, plop it onto the wound, and put the bandit on, and let it kind of happen by itself. So we assume that's not considered to be a problem of a mareach. What if it's more serious than that? What if it requires stitches? So then we have to always be concerned that anything that's a chashash of stitches can potentially snowball to become a chashash of pikuach nefesh. Things can get infected. It's a big, big gash. You can get infected, so it has to get looked at, has to be evaluated properly. The question is now: so you brought the child to the hospital. Have you got him there? Whatever. That's a gross membership issue. But Lamaise, you got the kid to the hospital, and the doctor says he needs stitches. How many stitches does the kid need? So in terms of cleaning up the infection and making sure nothing gets infected anymore, 5 stitches to get to the trick. The doctor says if you only do 5 stitches, the kid's gonna have a terrible scar. So we want to do 15 stitches. So what's the din? If it's a guy, Goyish doctor, the very doctor, whatever you want to do. But if it's a Jewish from doctor, so what's the din? So the poskim are, many poskim are makel. Shulman Zalman is makel that you're allowed to do even additional stitches, even though the additional stitches are not mamish, mamish, which are nefesh. So Shulman Zalman is makel based on 2 svaras. He says, first of all, there is a Magid Mishnah that says that when you have a chayla sheyesh b'sakon and Shabbos, it's also called tzarech ha'chayla. You're allowed to do whatever is normal for the tzarech of the chayla. Any physical care for the chayla you would do during the week, even if that particular care is not mamash b'kuch nefesh. Let's say you have a chayla sheyesh b'sakon and Shabbos, that the doctor says he needs a tliyada, and the doctor says he needs a surgery, and the grandmother comes in and says he needs a whole chicken soup. The doctor says, listen, he'll feel better if he has a chicken soup, but it's not going to make or break his medical condition. So like a mishnah for basket, it's like the bubble, like the grandmother, you're allowed to make the chicken soup in Shabbos. So the Mishabur doesn't accept that Magid Mishnah, but Reb Chaim, the Reb Chaim Briskei held that was the Iker Din, like that Magid Mishnah. So according to that, Shlomo Zalman says that adding the extra stitches is called Tzarech Yecholah, that the normal protocol, the normal medical protocol is to put in all the stitches, not just the Chatzis Shiur and the stitches. So Reb Shlomo Zalman thought you're allowed to rely on that Magid Mishnah. Then the Eidi Shlomeri quotes the Gemara in Shabbos, it talks about if you, when you're doing a Bris on Shabbos, so Kol's Man Shlomo Piri, you're allowed to be Chayzef in the Tzitzin Shein Ma'akvin. Even though the brisket was technically over already, we're yaitzei the mitzvah mila, but just to make it a little bit better, a little bit nicer, so you're allowed to continue as long as you haven't stopped the action, as long as you're still in the same basic action. So Shlomo Zalman brought a riot. He says, what's the difference between the case of the mila and the case of the stitches of the wound? So the doctor hasn't closed up yet. It's not like he finished and then he come back an hour later to another doctor. He's in the same oisei ma'aser. That's considered to be lo pirish. That's the big question when you learn that sugya in Shabbos. Is that analogous or not? Rosh Hashanah fought those two svaras lachol. I always feel when I'm going to be machmir against Rosh Hashanah, the kids can have a scarf for the rest of his life. So usually they don't even ask the shaila. Nobody asks the shaila. The doctor's not asking the shaila. It's the lomda yeshivish parent, father, the father's not asking the shaila. The father can help with the shpil parent in the hospital. Maybe an epis, maybe only do some of the stitches. So just keep your epis to yourself. Don't ask any questions. And whatever they have to do, they have to do it. It's a chashash of the growth nefesh and Rafinia's deity. You don't have to be some achdut. Between you and me, we're not even 100% sure what malach is involved in stitching altogether. The Shabbos quotes, some poskim thought that stitches may be a chashash of taifer, which others said, who says it's taifer and or ha'adam? Some said it's a chashash of kosher. Who says it's kosher, and this means it's kshir shem shukhayam, and the stitches are going to come out soon, less than a month, less than a year. A lot of tumah, we're not even 100% sure what malach is involved in the stitching. So, whatever Shlomo Zalman is up there, that it's mutter to do whatever is necessary. So I'm not going to be machmir against Shlomo Zalman. Okay, any last any particular questions the guys want to ask? There's one last clue we should say is that we alluded to it quickly before. One has to be careful not to ask a child to do malacha for you on Shabbos. A little baby, it's not relevant, but you have a 5-year-old. You start to ask a little kid to do things for you on Shabbos. That's a malacha. That's a misadereisa. That's a posse in the assessor. They ask a malacha at the vincha vitecha. Vincha vitecha refers to your child under bar mitzvah. Not only are you not allowed to ask them, if you see a child doing something for your benefit, you have to stop them. If you see a little kid, he's 2 years old, he doesn't know what's going on, he's standing there, turning the light on and off, so just try to get him to stop when the light's in the right position. But in terms of encouraging somebody to do malacha for you, so that's a very, very serious problem. There's a famous story about Reb Chaim that used to be an Erev in Brisk, even not in Brisk, city of Brisk had an Erev. So one Shabbos, the Erev fell down. Reb Chaim felt very bad that he thought people were going to carry Shlok Yedin in Europe. People didn't have their own oven. There would be one baker's oven for the whole town. People would bring their chillens from before Shabbos, and then they would pick it up on Shabbos morning. So Reb Chaim sat by the baker's oven all Shabbos, tell all the women who would come after davening they shouldn't carry the chillen back because there was no Erev. So a woman came with a little girl, picked up the chillen, so Reb Chaim told her that the Erev fell down. So the mother said, okay, I won't carry it. I'll tell my daughter to carry it. So Reb Chaim said, you can't do that. So the mother said, oh, come on. She's on the bus mitzvah. I can tell her. So Reb Chaim said, I'll do that. She said, come on, be real. So she told the daughter to carry the chillen. So the way the story goes, that Reb Chaim sent the shamus back to the woman's husband to tell him that she threw out all the wine in the house because his wife is Michal Shabbos for Hesia. Because he told her in public, not to Michal Shabbos, it's Michal Shabbos. That's the story. So when I saw that story, I didn't understand the longest of that story because who says that called an act of Chil Shabbos? The fact that I'm machshel my child, I'm asking my child in Malacha, who says that called the Chil Shabbos to give him? Maybe that, there's a din of Kol Tarkula. I'm not allowed to feed trafes to my child, not allowed to feed trafes to anybody's child. I'm not allowed to take the baby katan, the baby coat and walk up to the cemetery. So who says that's a din pratim of the Shabbos? I never really understood that story until I saw a tshuva in Reb Chaim Hoyzen and Achiezer, so he deals with the kashya, if wearing a mask. If there's a din of Kol Tarkul, you're not allowed to cause a child to do an aveira, any yisudiraisa. So why do you need a pasuk to assess the difference? Kashya assess the difference. Why does it have to say, l'saspa ato vincha? I would know it myself. You can learn it out from Machal Sasuras, from Kohen Kotlin. There are a lot of Makaras that you can't but you can't be machal b'yadayim. So what's the need for the special possibility of Sarah to do this? So Reb Chaim Isaac gives a few different answers on different Achorim give. And then at the end he quotes with Shemati and Reb Chaim Briska. He heard from that Reb Chaim had answered this kasha by saying that the chiddush of the Sarah to do this is that it's a protein of Chashavis. In the Kotar Kula, it's not that it's a protein in Machos of Suvas, it's a general list of called Lahachil Isurim Tekhtanim. But in Shabbos, it's the Schadish one that's misaprot, it's called Chilu Shabbos. When I saw that quote from Reb Chaim, then I understood the story that happened verse with the Shalom. But now, Reb Chaim Lashitosa held that that was an act of Chilu Shabbos, so she becomes a Fidin Machal Shabbos Pesach. Anyway, so it's an interesting story, but Lamai is the bottom line, I shouldn't tell you to do things for the Shabbos. Okay. Any last questions?
Not necessarily related to children, but in terms of a Shabbos Kol, having a dishwasher or a,
or
a dryer from Arab Shabbos.
But you shouldn't do that, because that's a Shabbos Kol. Right. That's a Shabbos Kol.
Can you put a baby next to the light?
I mean, the baby, if a little baby doesn't understand anything, I'm just going to plop them down next to the light and hope and pray that they turn the light on. Yes, the mikveh, then that's okay. If the mamash pitch black in the room and I'm going to now be nen from that light, that's a machlekes haposkim, is there a problem of being nen and lecha shabbos done derech l'sasim? That's a shabbos. But if the child knows what's going on and I nudge him a little bit and say, come on, I want you to open the light, and the kid does it to make me happy, that's a serious problem. Okay. All right. Okay. Up here. You guys usually down there or no?
We'll make it downstairs.
Okay. Down there.